Shrivaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 4, Chapter 28, Text Number 19. The Science of Becoming a Woman in Your Next Life. So, Namana Shite Bhungte. Nasnate snati matpara. Mai rushte san susantrastha. Bharchite yatavag bhayat. Namaya nasate bhungte. Nasnate snati matpara. Mai rushte sutan tat trasta. Bharchate yatavag bhayat. Na. Never. Mayi. When I. Anashite. Had not eaten. Mungte. She would eat. Na. Never. Asnate. Had not taken bath. Snati. She would take her bath. Matpara, always devoted to me. Mayi, when I. Rushte, was angry. Su santrastha, very much frightened. Bhartsite, when I chastised. Yata vak, fully controlled of words. Bharyat, out of fear. Translation. King Bhuranjana then began to think of his past dealings with his wife. He recalled that his wife would not take her dinner until he had finished his, that she would not take her bath until he had finished his. And she was always very much attached to him, so much so that if he would sometimes become angry and chastise her, she would simply remain silent and tolerate his misbehavior. Very interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada. A wife is always supposed to be submissive to her husband. Submission, mild behavior, and subservience are qualities in a wife which makes a husband very thoughtful of her. For family life, it is very good for a husband to be attached to his wife, but it is not very good for spiritual advancement. Thus, Krishna consciousness must be established in every home. If a husband and wife are very much attached to one another in Krishna consciousness, they will both benefit because Krishna is the center of their existence. Otherwise, if the husband is too much attached to his wife, he becomes a woman in his next life. The woman being overly attached to her husband becomes a man in her next life. Of course, it is an advantage for a woman to become a man, but it is not at all advantageous for a man to become a woman. Very popular in today's society, this idea. End of purport. Any questions? Om Agyana Timirandhasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshura Niditam Dena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam. These social topics capture attention today. The role of the different genders and how we deal with things. Just before visiting you here in Los Angeles, I was in New Vrindavan where we had our temple president GBC meetings, and the section that was being discussed was from the ninth canto. On the topic was Parashuram and his becoming enraged, incensed, carried away with Kartavirya-Arjuna's stealing of the Kamadeno of his father. So Kartavirya-Arjuna had this, he was puffed up in our ISKCON vernacular. He was very powerful and very handsome and filled with himself, macho guy. Really powerful kshatriya, and he came to Jamadagni's ashram and he saw, oh, look at that Kamadhenu. I want it. He was not only macho, he was envious. I guess the two go well together. And so he stole the Kamadhenu. And Parashuram went after him. And Kartavirya-Arjuna had 1,000 arms, and with 500 bows, he shot simultaneously 500 arrows at Parashuram, who took his chopper and cut him all to pieces, all the arrows and all the bows and all the arms and the head. And his 1,000 sons went fleeing for their lives. And Parashuram brought back the Kamadhenu and told his brothers and his father what happened. And his father was not happy. Oh, my dear son, what you have done is not at all good, because the ornament of the brahmanas is forgiveness. And the ornament of the brahmanas being forgiveness, this is what brings qualification. The other brahminical qualities come to the brahmana because of this quality, that they rise to the platform of goodness. What is the saying? To err is human and to forgive is divine. Of course, it's a worldly kind of divine, not a transcendental kind of divine, if it's not connected to the personality of Godhead, which is the message of this verse also. So in that connection, Prabhupada describes the ornaments of different groups of people. The ornament of the brahmana is his forgiveness. The ornament of the kshatriya is his chivalry and heroism, and he will not back down from some combat. And the ornament of the vaishya is his offering protection to the cows and giving in charity. And the ornament of the Shudras, their faithfulness to their master. The ornament of, similarly mentioned, the ornament of the woman is her faithfulness and chastity to the husband. Hopefully he's a qualified husband, because it's a problem if he's not. Big problem if it's not. So, but all of these ornaments are, there's different paths to try to achieve them. One is this, the Vedic path of performance of, according to one's prescribed duty, performance of one's prescribed duty under the codes of the Vedas, and gradually those decorations become manifest. But in the bhakti process, the ornaments become manifest just by Krishna decorating his devotee with those ornaments, because Krishna becomes pleased. When Krishna is pleased with his devotee, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinshana sair vayurganais tatra samasate sarahi, decorates the devotees with nice qualities. So in the Daivi Varnashram system, there's duties prescribed for different social orders, and when one does those duties with the purpose of pleasing Krishna, Krishna decorates one with ornaments. So the ornament for the wife, it's mentioned here that in detail. What does that mean, faithfulness and chastity to husband? Just like in Mahabharata, I believe it's Mahabharata, when the solar eclipse situation happens, and for the first time, so many associates of Krishna get the opportunity to come together. And in one section, Satyabhama has a discussion with Draupadi and says, how do you do it? How do you control 5 powerful husbands? Do you put some potion in their food or something like that? And Draupadi says, no. Any husband that understands that kind of behavior from his wife you're finished. Would never have anything to do with, would just reject such a wife. But then she describes how she doesn't say keeps my husbands under control, but how she pleases them so much by her service in some of the very same ways as described here. She would not take rest before they took rest, and she was up in the morning before they were up in the morning and ready to serve them. And her life was just dedicated to pleasing her husbands. And so they became naturally very pleased. Just like Sukanya and who was the grumpy, grouchy rishi? Chavana Rishi? Old enough to be her grandfather, and, you know, mean-spirited. And so she didn't go, yuck. She went, I know how to, I'll just anticipate his every single need. And she was there taking care of his every single need. And the grumpy, grouchy sage became different. He got his heart changed. And so he wanted to do that which would be pleasing to her instead of just being grumpy and grouchy. Nice lesson. So that's on the Prabhupada, the emphasis in the purport is going to that's the material side, and for material purposes, how does he write it? For family life, it is very good for the wife to be like this and the husband to be like that. Very good. So we teach that in our Krishna consciousness movement. We should be teaching that in our Krishna consciousness movement. These are how to be successful in grihastha, entering into grihastha ashram or maintaining grihastha ashram, is these principles. It makes for good relations between husband and wife. And when there's not good relations between husband and wife, we find out this is very problematic. So it's necessary. But it is not very good for spiritual advancement. So we want to make spiritual advancement. So don't care about those things. Don't pay attention to those things. And you have a problem in your ashram. You may try to keep it quiet, but it doesn't stay quiet somehow. It becomes a problem. So the resolution that Prabhupada is making here is that if a husband and wife are very attached to one another in Krishna consciousness, so how do you do that? How do you be attached in Krishna consciousness or perform duties in Krishna consciousness? Just like there's these, it's a nice metaphor. There's chandeliers in the ceiling here. And our cameras can't pick up on that, but those of you here can. So there's some nice crystal and bulbs and, you know, geometric shape of that nice chandelier. But it's all suspended by one point. So when the one point is secure, then the chandelier is very nice. And if that one point is not secure, look out below. It's a problem. The beauty is lost. So what that one point, the message, the Bhagavatam's message, Prabhupada's message in the purport, is that one thing upon which all the decorations have their real value is the surrender to Krishna, or service to Krishna. That's the message of the Bhagavatam. The dissatisfaction, say it differently, the dissatisfaction of Vyas after compiling all of the Vedas was he had not sufficiently secured this one thing, according to the indication of Narada. So many zeros without the one in front. Without the one, with the one in front, then it's very valuable. So, Western culture, we know what it is. It's the culture of no culture. So there isn't the sense of value. And then when someone comes along and presents this as a value, at least some people take shelter of the value. But the value of honoring and respecting family life, minus the one in front, or whatever it means, just like one of the fastest growing religions, at least in America, perhaps in the world, is the Mormon faith, and one of their strongest values is family. Very, 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 very strong. Very strong. And people are attracted. At least some people are, a growing number of people are attracted, wanting to see strong family units. And, you know, so many things are built around that value. If that value doesn't have the one in front very clearly, then what's the result? The result is King Paranjana becomes a woman. Or values that, ethics and values and morals that don't have a very clear sense of God consciousness in the front side, if that's not the purpose of the value, at best it can lead to elevation in the modes of nature, which is good. It's better than degradation in the modes of nature, but from a transcendental point of view, it's useless without Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness doesn't mean, you know, a sectarian statement, Krishna consciousness. It means being very clear. Who is the personality of Godhead? And our commitment to doing each of the good things that we try to do for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. just another example of this is when I spent what part of my GBC responsibilities in St. Louis, and they have, since Shadaratma's days, when he was the president, lots of interrelationships with the Vegetarian Society. He was the president of the Vegetarian Society in St. Louis. And there's outreach in that way, and people come to the restaurant. So there was one, there's a table where there's literature. There's our ISKCON literature, but there's this kind of thing that people do. They put their own literature. So I saw one Buddhist pamphlet. So I looked through the Buddhist pamphlet, and in a box, and in highlights is the highest virtue of life is nonviolence, or the highest principle of life is nonviolence. And I thought, wow, that's like the highest thing that you know is nonviolence. What about God? There's no connection. In Buddhism, there's not connection to God. It's just a value. And people like that. They don't have to surrender. And they just hold a value as being very important. And that's very popular. Not only, you know, it's one of the fastest growing religions in America. Just share this with you in the course of traveling in America in the past 2 weeks. I was probably asked about 10 times in the course of traveling. People would, you know, in the course of traveling would just say hello and say, you know, are you with some religion? Or they would say, after that, are you a Buddhist monk? I said, well, I'm a monk, but not a Buddhist monk. Because Dalai Lama was zooming around out here in Seattle and Portland. So they would say, well, then what kind of monk? And I would say, Hare Krishna. And some people would say, oh. And some other people would say, what? Then, you know, having a nice discussion about what the difference between Buddhism and, you know, this is so in a nice way to let people know this is putting one in front. Where there's values, but the emphasis goes to Krishna. And just again, focus on what Prabhupada is writing here in the purport. If the husband is too much attached to the wife, he becomes a woman in his next life. The woman being overly attached means the one isn't there. There's attachment without the upliftment and purification that comes from putting Krishna in the center. It's a nice tension between being very devoted to serving Krishna, and so be attached to the service that you do for Krishna, because it's for Krishna, but at the same time detached. One devotee once shared with me, they asked Prabhupada, is it okay, Srila Prabhupada, if we become attached to our service? And Prabhupada's answer was, yes, until the spiritual master then assigns you another service. And then you're very detached from the previous service, and you become very attached to the next service. So that's a nice instruction. Because we have it, the human tendency, conditioned tendency, is to become attached. Even, you know, to the position of renunciation. Like in Ramanujacharya's life, he demonstrated to his disciples how the sannyasis were attached to their cloth, and this grihastha couple were completely attached to serving the Vaishnavas. And that led to detachment. So, or helping someone come to Krishna consciousness, or helping someone who is in Krishna consciousness, and helping with a genuine caring, but at the same time, a proper level of detachment. So, level of detachment at least, so we don't own their problems. but we can at the same time care very deeply about their situation. That's possible if we're attached to Krishna, if Krishna is at the center. We are attached to Krishna and Krishna's service. But at the same time, the spirit of detachment is there because it's for Krishna's service. Okay, looking at the clock, and we have a few minutes for questions. See if there's any discussion. Yes. Mataji? I saw your hand first. Go ahead. Oh, microphone. Okay. Okay.
Thank you for a great class. My question is, could you clarify if Buddhists are atheists and Buddha was the incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna, by worshipping Buddha, how can they be atheists since that is the incarnation of God himself? And we had this discussion one time at Hridayananda Prabhu Maharaj's house, and he said that because he was about to give a class on Buddhism in University of Florida, and he was studying this diligently, and he said that it wasn't so much about being atheist, because when Buddha came in, people were so corrupt that he focused on trying to get them to live properly,
yeah,
not being violent, not eating meat, right, respecting the animals and respecting each other. And there wasn't so much time as to teach them about the afterworld. But in most of the books that I read, Buddhism is considered as atheism, that they don't know God. But if they worship Buddha, who is the incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna, personality of God himself, how can they be atheists if they are worshipping God?
Okay. The term or the expression that they are atheists is to say they do not have a conception of God. Lakshmi Moni will appreciate this. Rupanuga Prabhu used to be really like the king of giving college classes. I go through this whole thing. He had a very impressive stature. You know, very tall. You know, like Mr. Clean. You know, Yul Brynner or something. You know, a very powerful presence. And he would come into the classroom I was his assistant. And he would set up a picture of Krishna and set up a little cloth like this. It was like a ritual. Light a stick of incense, ring a little teeny bell, offer the incense, sit down very straight, and explain the mantra, and then silence. You know, then his first words were, "What is the highest truth you know?" Actually, even before he did the mantra, that the mantra came at the end. When they first heard him speak something, "What's the highest truth you know?" Wow. It was effective. So if the highest truth you know is nonviolence, where's God? Now, the point that you're making is the person who said it is an incarnation of God. But that's not acknowledged that he's an incarnation of God as much as the highest truth is this ethic, this principle, this moral goodness. The quality of goodness is the highest thing that's being held forward. That's not theism. So what the Bhagavatam writes is Buddha tricked the atheists. Don't follow the Vedas, follow me. And then he said what the Vedas said. At least part of what the Vedas said. Be nonviolent on this particular point. Because what the Vedas were saying was being misused. So It's atheism in the sense that the teaching is not presenting the soul or God. It's presenting moralities and ethics. In that sense, atheistic. But it's a religion in the sense that its teachings coming from God, who is Buddha, or at least an incarnation of God. So is it, those who didn't want to surrender to God were brought to the position of at least following proper standards of life. All right? Trick the atheists, is Prabhupada's expression. Something else? Bhrigupati.
Thank you for a nice class, Maharaj. I was just reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a statement in the chapter where Lord Chaitanya delivers the residents of Varanasi. It was saying that devotional service is meant for people in all countries, at all times, in all circumstances, etc., etc. And then the purport, Prabhupada was elaborating upon that. He was pointing out how devotional service is paro dharma, it's transcendental to mundane religiosity. And he specifically mentioned, you know, how Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, etc. So, of course, as followers of Srila Prabhupada and, you know, this philosophy, we accept that. We just, you know, it's a claim, basically. As he didn't present an argument as to why that is so. The purport was basically an elaboration on that this is the case. And that's okay for us. You know, it's a claim. It's based on Shastra. And that's we're fine with that. But if I were to try to present that, as we do, pretty much, in our preaching to somebody who is a member of one of these other faiths, they probably wouldn't agree. I mean, unless I could come up with... I'd have to do something more than just give them the claim. I'd have to present them with a logical argument, something more than even a Shastric statement, because they would, you know, obviously that wouldn't be significant to them. So... what is our presentation?
What is our which?
What do we say exactly to try to convince somebody, in a nutshell, if that's possible, that this is paro dharma, this is transcendental to mundane religiosity, which is what theirs is. You know, they're obviously on. And this, the answer to this question might be related to the answer to this previous question you just gave. But this, how would you deal with it? You're talking to somebody who's a Muslim, and you're telling them, trying to tell them that, well, this is transcendental to, you know, your religiosity, and how would you go about getting him to accept that?
Well, the premise of the question is a little different than an approach that I would take. I mean, I don't feel it's our responsibility and duty to have people understand that what they're doing is down here, what we're doing is up here. But what are the principles of paradharma is what our duty was. That's our responsibility. What is it? And that essence may be within some of the things that they hold dear. But what is that essence? Because the Srimad Bhagavatam and paradharma is expressing essence. Just like the phrase in this verse is matpara. Matparayana. And Krishna uses that phrase. Become devoted to me. Like manmanam avabhad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Matpara. Become my devotee. So here it's where the principle, the religious principle, of the wife being very devoted to her husband. That's a religious principle. But that's not paradharma. For the paradharmi, for one who's following paradharma, that may very well be a principle that they follow, but it's the chandelier. It's not the... So let's look at what the essence of what holds those things that are valuable in life to bring us to the ultimate goal. That's the essence. That's how we need to discuss. It's not our religion, your religion. It's what's the principle? And how can we make that manifest?
Come back and say something like, you know, nicely, of course, well, what is the essence of your religion?
Yeah.
And then...
it's like this Rupa Nuga say, what's the highest truth you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cut to the chase. What's the highest... Because I've been through discussions with people. They talk, oh, yeah, we're practicing bhakti also. Okay, what's the goal? And you get down to it and it's become one with the Supreme. In the literal sense. That's their conception. And that's not Paradharma. So, you know, that's the right response. Okay. Well, and what's the essence of what your religion is? That was Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Chan Kazi. You're faulting me for converting people to another religion. But let's talk about what religion is. What's the essence of religion? The essence of religion is love of God. That which brings people to love of God, that's the essence. Something else? Yes.
Since you mentioned the Buddhist question answered that, I do have a question regarding that. It does state, I do believe in Prabhupada's books, that there's a questionable thing of whether this Buddha was an incarnation of God or whether it was from a different Manu or Kalpa or time.
I never heard that dialogue, Prabhupada's.
Well,
I'm familiar with is Prabhupada saying the Bhagavatam predicted Buddha thousands of years before he came. And he was a Shaktivesha avatar with a specific purpose that he delineated.
Isn't there a statement that says that one of the great personalities in our lineage said that this Buddha was from a different time?
I am unaware of that reference, and if you show me the reference, we can discuss it.
Yeah, in the second canto, there was another Buddha in a previous Kali Yuga. In the second canto, in a purport, Prabhupada talks about it. There was an other Buddha, and I don't remember if that Buddha was being referred to as an incarnation of God or not.
Without the specific reference, it's hard to discuss. It's a
sorry, no problem.
Interesting
that was a
point.
Different comment that I had. I mean, a different issue, but I can get back to that, I guess. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.